Step aboard Motor Yacht Unbridled, where elegance meets the open sea. Dive into a world of refined adventure, tailored experiences, and five-star service. From sun-soaked decks to moonlit dinners, every moment on Unbridled is designed to indulge your senses, whether it's an intimate escape or a celebration of a lifetime. Unbridled, where the extraordinary is standard.
And for all of those who can hear us, I appreciate your time. I know we're all busy. My name's Captain Liam, Motor Yacht Unbridled. I'm on the bridge now, underway, just off the coast of, where are we, gentlemen?
Nicaragua?
Guatemala.
We're off the coast of Guatemala and Motor Yacht Unbridled. Available for charter. Any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. And we are honoured to have one of the legends of the industry who's come off the yachts and went from the shore to the yachts, come back off the yachts, Chris. From Montclair Chef Agency. Welcome aboard.
Thank you so much, Ian. It's a pleasure to be here. And yeah, I look forward to any question you have. I'm ready.
Oh, perfect, perfect. Well, we'll go from the top. Just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you ended up on yachts, maybe, you know?
It's a good question. It's a good question. Look, born and raised in France, south of Paris. So I started cooking when I was, I think, just under 15 years old. I was, I think, 14 and a half, so pretty early. I did a few years in France, I think five, six years, until I realized that I was curious to see what other countries had to offer. So I packed my bag, I booked a flight, and I went to the UK. First job was actually in Yorkshire. I didn't know where I was going. It was just like, I had this agency in France. They found me a job. I was like, yeah, I'll take it. So I jumped on the plane. I went there. I ended up in Yorkshire. It was not my cup of tea. Too gray, too many sheep, not a lot to do outside. Cause it was really in this like amazing castle that was in the middle of nowhere. Beautiful place. But for me, it really wasn't my cup of tea at the time. So spoke to the agency. They were like, all right, sweet. We got another job for you. Go to Poole in Dorset. So the opposite of the country on the South Coast. And that was a lot more my style. So yeah. Seafront, traditional hotel, English pub, you know, traditional English cuisine as well, which is something that at the end, pushed me out a little bit. No, but look, I got there. I didn't speak any English or very basic, because in France the level of English that we teach is still, you know, it's very, very basic. So I probably knew how to count to 20 and, you know, 10 colors. And that's about it. So I went to UK. I went
to fruit doesn't have more than three colors anyway. So
there you go. No, so I worked in this hotel, pub restaurant for about 10 months, I think. It was a great introduction to not only the language, but the culture in the UK. So, you know, listening to English all day long, watching English TV, speaking English. There was no French people around. There was no exit for me. I couldn't just take the easy route. So I learned the language. After 10 months, I was quite tired of the style of food because, you know, let's be honest, it was traditional English. Nothing against it, but it was so far from what I've studied in France and from what, you know, I was craving as well, just as a French guy.
Growing, you like, you know?
Yeah. And you know, Liam, what happened is I started reading books. So I remember the first book that I read was The French Laundry by Thomas Keller, because a cat that was working in the kitchen with me told me about the book, and he was like, hey, you got to read it. And I read it. I was like, wow, this really takes me back to my country, because he talks about passion, yeah, about this, you know, this old lady that cooks in the kitchen and like the staff meal, all of this, like the part of cooking that people don't really see if you just go as a guest, as a client in a restaurant. But I lived myself as a chef, as a young chef in France. So I read this book and I loved it, obviously. And he was like, okay, maybe one day I can go to the French Laundry. Second book that I read was, so I went to the library in Poole, cause at the time, you know, library was a place to find your information, which sound like, I mean, it sounds like it was yesterday to me, but it's not. So anyway, I found a second book, the autobiography of Michel Roux, one of the Roux brothers. which is one of two French guys that went to the UK in, you know, in the 60s, I think, 60, 65 or something, 1960, 1965. They were two brothers. First one, they were the first to open a restaurant in London, a French restaurant. First to get one Michelin star, and then two Michelin star, and then three Michelin star. So it was quite a big, you know, big event in London at the time. So the brothers, you know, like brothers do, they were fighting, so they split. One stayed in London, and the other one opened the Waterside Inn in Bray-on-Thames.
Okay.
So I just read the book, and I was amazed by how much Michel Roux Sr. had accomplished, because this guy traveled the world. He cooked for celebrity, he cooked for the Queen every year. He was doing the menu on the Concorde at the time, which was, you know, the supersonic plane. He cooked in the Kremlin. He was the first chef, the foreign chef, to go into Kremlin for like 300 years or something. So it's like a long list of accomplishments as a chef. And I was just blown away. And I was like, hey, I wonder if where the restaurant is. And I just looked it up. And long story short, sent my CV. Got a call back from his son, Alain, that said, you know, in a very nice voice, he said, like, hey, Chris, thank you for your CV. We would love to have you do a cooking trial for us, or like a, you know, couple of days trial. So I was like, yes, please. So yeah. During my 2 days off at the hotel in Poole, I just, you know, jumped on a train, went to do the cooking trial, or the trial, the work trial, and then got a job. And that was my the last restaurant I worked at. So we're talking about, you know, was it 20 years ago? Yeah, 20 years ago, 19 years ago. So this restaurant was a three Michelin star restaurant. Wow. This year they celebrated their 40th birthday, or the 40th year of holding three stars, which is incredible. Yeah. And, you know, this really changed the way I cooked as a chef. Because before I knew, you know, I was working in like brasserie, in cafes, in traditional French restaurant, in patisserie, in butcher shop. Like I did, you know, a lot of different stuff. But the what I've learned in this place kind of like forced me to erase everything I've learned before and just restart from fresh. And, you know, this kitchen was very busy. There was about 25 chefs in a kitchen. Everything was made on site. We would work extremely hard. When I say hard, like I keep telling people we're doing 16 to 17 hours a day. Every day. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm not trying to make people feel bad for us, but this is what happened. We would, you know, we would get shit from the head chef if we start before 7:30. But everyone would start before 7 because we didn't have time to be ready for service. So the head chef would be, or the sous chef would be upset at us and be like, you guys, you cannot start so early. You got to start at 7:30 or 8. We're like, yeah. But we had to. There was so much to do.
You've got the list.
Yeah, massive list and a lot of work and a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, a lot of, you know, it was not a healthy environment. It was amazing for my cooking skills, but for my body, for my health, like, look, we didn't eat much. We would not sleep a lot. Then at the end, you know, when you get to the end of the week, when you get to Friday, like you would go out for a few hours. Like, I don't even know how I survived. Like me and the other guys, we would go out for like 3-4 hours, barely sleep, and then go do another 17 hours of work.
And then you're trying to fit a form of social life in there, and it's always with the people around you because you've got no time to manage.
And you know, Liam, it's also the fact that you need to switch off sometimes. And being always focused, always stressed, always worry about, you know, getting ready for service, it can only take so long. So I feel like you, like, sleep was not as important as just being able to switch off.
Yeah. True, very much so. I mean, like I was telling you before, my father's a chef and two brothers are chef and a cousin's a great chef, all in the east coast of Byron Bay, and they all traveled internationally, either to Amsterdam, Edinburgh, London, Isle of Man, south of France. When they left, had their apprenticeship, went overseas to travel. And the world of Europe and the culinary strength and the core of cooking in Europe is just, it's the center of the culinary world. And all of these other countries kind of stem from that, from a culinary perspective. So, and that's when we get real good produce in different places. But I grew up in that environment and sense in a fine dining restaurant and saw my brothers go through it. And I think that's why I chose went to sea and chose the bridge and kind of chose that. I mean,
it's a hard job.
Yes, it's hard. But I've always had the utmost respect for chefs, especially in yachting, because it's the one position that doesn't really fit in the sense of the traditional aspect in the maritime sector. Like when we talk about maritime sector, we talk about there's a cook.
Yeah.
And a lot of times captains think, oh, the chef's job's not that important. I think what's happening in the last 5 to 10 years, people are really starting to value the different crew in yachting, not just chefs, but they're starting to value the chief stewardesses, the chief engineers, the chief officers, the different deck crew. How have you seen a change in your career, the value people have put on chefs to where it is now?
Look, I think it actually connects to what I just told you about switching off.
Yeah.
Because on board, people, look, big picture is I feel like since COVID, a lot of people are concerned about their well-being a lot more than before, their mental health, and they want to take care of themselves. And I feel like chefs on boats, they provide this. You know, they are paid to provide well-being to the owners when they come on the boat or the charter guests, because food is you know, is comfort, but also to the crew. And if you don't take care of hiring the right chef, or if you're not, you know, you don't give the budget to the chef to create great food for the crew, this is if you think about it, when you're working a charter or you're working a long season, this is kind of your escape from work. You know, you either sleep, you work, or you're like eating. And this is kind of like, if you don't have good food, I feel like it makes life more difficult.
But do you see the industry respected? I mean, you've seen the industry, the brokers, the captains, the owners. You've seen in the last 5 years the fact that they've actually put a lot of value into chefs, and you're seeing that in the wages increase. Would you agree?
Yes and no. Yes and no. There is still two sides. There's, you know, there's one side which understand that, and the reason is also because we can talk about rotation, because I feel like I would love for everyone to get rotation. Just put it this way. And I feel like because there is more and more boats coming out of the yard, there's more and more big boats to catch the good chef, the chef with experience, they have to give rotation, and then they absorb all of these good chefs. And then you have the other boat that maybe wouldn't have considered giving rotation 5 years ago. But today they have to, because otherwise they cannot.
I agree and disagree, but because if you're in the other shoe, if you're an owner and a principal, I agree rotation and the break it gives people. But if you're an owner and you have your style of cooking, I've worked with some great owners over the years, and they fine-tune their relationship with their chef that they don't have to worry about menu planning. They don't have to worry about what's presented. The chef understands the quantities and the qualities. That's what that owner wants, and that's the core of our business. We look after the client. We look after the owner. So I think rotation's applicable in the ideal world, and it's applicable for charter yachts because you can have two high-quality chefs. But for an owner, if we're looking after the end user, you can tell the difference between two chefs pretty quick. Would you
100%,
agree?
100%. There's two sides. One side is you could also get, you know, great experience, just totally different style of cooking, which could work. True. You could also have a rotation where the chef is the guest chef or the boss chef, and then he would go on board when the guest comes and then go off, and then another chef can come and replace. Depends on the size of the team, you know. I get your point. If you talk about a private boat and there is only one owner that used him and his family, having the same chef is amazing. That's what I've done in my last role, you know?
That chef usually gets bored after a couple of seasons going, can I cook something else? But
you know, Liam, this is the question that everyone asks. It's like, is it harder to work as a chef on a charter boat or on a private boat? Okay. What do you think?
I think it'd be harder on a charter boat with the different demands coming in.
You know what I've heard the most? It's the opposite. Yeah. Is that it's harder to work on a private boat because, and I know firsthand because my last job, I did 9 years on the same boat for a private family, you know? And the hard thing is to always create better stuff, better food, better menus, but keep the standard because they're not open to so much changes. But they still expect you to do more. And they also, after year one, they get used to you, to what you do. Like you come on the boat, they're like, wow, my God, this chef is amazing. I did another summer, this becomes normal. The year after, you got to crank it up. And so, but they want to eat the same food. So this becomes very tricky. And then these owners, they often spend, you know, weeks on the boat. They don't just come for a week and then go home. They stay like 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks. So you have that type of jobs. And then you have the charter that comes for 7 days. As a chef myself, if I've got a 7 days charter, And man, I've got an easy 20 recipe in my head that are like, you know, they're like banger. Everyone loves it. So this is kind of an easy. I'm going to be like, this day, I'm going to do these dishes. And they're all going to be like, you know, hopefully impressing everyone.
But yeah, I appreciate what you were saying. It is a challenge. You know what I mean? The private and charter side of things.
Yeah. Because when you have 7 days, it's okay. I understand you need to cook what the guest wants, the charter guest. But there is also, if you don't have too much requests, you can always place dishes that you know work and that you can prepare quite easily. And then nothing stops you from repeating every week, second week, third week, fourth week, kind of the same structure of the menu.
True. But the thing is, I appreciate about chefs is there's zero room for error in chefs, in my opinion, as a captain and as seeing and speaking to the clients. Like, we have a world-class chef on board. Calvin Stokes is a beautiful man, the Culinary Institute of America trained, a wonderful career. And he just doesn't make mistakes. And it's just, and that consistency.
You know what his strength is. You know what his strength is, yeah, Liam. I'm sure he makes mistakes, but they do not leave the galley. You know, this is the talent of a great chef, is that you can make mistakes, but you should just, you know, the show must go on. You should like make sure no one notice. So you need to have backup. True. You need to have ideas. You need to have ways to, you know, to fix things if they're not like coming out the way you want. Because also the tricky thing with food is, you know, we're talking about natural produce that are never the same size, never the same texture, never the same amount of water, sugar. It's all different. So this is where being a chef is very tricky, because it's very, you know, it's very emotional. You have to cook with your emotion, with your senses.
Yeah, you're vested in it. And the timing's hard. I do find that's why it's challenging. That's why I really appreciate your time, because you are really the echelon of, you know, culinary recruitment in yachting and also villas ashore.
Yeah.
So your company's providing villas ashore and also yachting, correct?
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you why. I thought about this. And when I started Montclair Chef, my goal was to provide, you know, yacht chef recruitment services. Of course, I have clients that are in Monaco, that are in London, that have residences. But I really thought the core of the activity would be this. But then I realized that first I was getting demand for private chefs. And when you think about it, being a private chef or being a yacht chef, you often cook for the same person, for the same family.
Yeah.
So someone that worked as a private chef for 10 years, I can easily place him or her in a private residence. And they will know what to do, because they've worked, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for high-profile families for years. They know exactly what to do. And they have, and to be honest, it's almost easy. Okay, it's not easy, but it's almost a little bit easier in a residence to be a chef than being on a boat. Because on a boat, you know, if you're missing something, well, tough luck. You're going to wait 7 days to get your delivery, you know, or you're going to wait tomorrow morning to send a tender ashore and hope that you'll find what you're looking for. But if you're in a residence, you just call the guy and tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. is going to be on your, you know, on the back door. It's going to be delivered.
But I think a lot of chefs enjoy not the camaraderie in yachting, but that the yachting industry really is a special industry for the amount of traveling people do, relationships people develop, the stories they have, the places they go. So the next question I kind of got here is regarding budget. How much, you know, obviously with chefs, it's difficult because your result is based on what you're putting in, what quality produce you're putting in.
Yeah.
So do your chefs talk much about budget with your clients? And do you talk much about with the clients about the budget? And how much does that affect the success of the chef?
Look, it's a good question, but we to be totally transparent, most of the clients that own or charter a yacht, they don't care about the budget. They're not trying to save $50 here and there, or, you know, maybe a couple of grand on a delivery this week. They want results. They come on board to have the experience for themselves, for their family, for their guests, for their friends, and they just want the best. They want and you know, within you know, respect to what you're buying, you cannot just, you know, spend $200,000 on a weekly delivery on the boat. Unless you're chartering a boat that costs $3 million a week, like maybe you can afford it. But again, do you need that much produce on board?
Therefore, the question is your client the end user, the ultra high net worth person, or is your client the captain of the yacht or the chief stewardess who's looking, or the brokerage firm looking to employ you? What percentage?
I have three clients, Liam.
It's tough.
I have the chef because I need to take care of the chefs. Because, you know, if I don't take care of them, I don't answer them, I don't, you know, consider them, then I don't have a business. I have the captain or the estate managers that recruit the chefs or the staff. But I also have the billionaire on top, or the, you know, the principals that want a good chef. So I would say everyone is. So it's like a restaurant. You have to please everyone. You have to service all your customers, no matter if they take the cheap price or if they take the, you know, the big steak on a menu.
Yeah. It's the old Simon and Garfunkel song, just trying to keep the customer satisfied.
Yeah.
You know? That was how my father used to end the restaurant every night. It was just a Simon and Garfunkel song. I'm just trying to keep the customer satisfied. If they leave happy, perfect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. And it's a tough job. And I feel like, Liam, for me, the one word that would summarize my career as a chef, and that I realized, you know, in the last few years as a chef, is consistency. This is the one thing that I've learned at the three Michelin star level. And this is what Michel Roux, because I went on a trip with him to Singapore for 2 weeks to do like a Michelin star promotion with him. So it was amazing to spend 2 weeks with him, like really close to him. And
you really developed your relationship with him. Wow.
Yeah. And I was a young chef, and I was just like, you know, I was very grateful to do this because I was next to a legend. As a chef, this guy is, and he's now passed away a few years ago. And the restaurant still run with his son and with, you know, a lot of good people there. Yeah, what he told me is like consistency is the key to everything. As a chef, you got to be consistent on when you start, how you get organized, how you clean, how your sauces taste, you know? If you come one day to my restaurant or to my kitchen or to my table, it has to taste the same next week because your expectation will be on the same level. So the way you cook your steak, the way you make your, you know, your pastry, your bread, everything, it's all about consistency.
True. And what trends? I mean, one of the questions that comes in here is what trends are you seeing in yachting in terms of with chefs? Are you seeing a higher demand for sushi train chefs, pastry chefs, or more galleys are starting to get more staff in to assist with different requirements?
I feel like we're not yet on the ultra specialized yacht chef trend. We're still because again, there is not enough room to have many chefs on a boat. So sometimes you have just two or one. So you still have to be able to do a lot. You have to be able to, you know, to make good bread, to make pastry. You're going to make sushi Saturday night because, you know, Madame wants sushi. You're going to make burger on, you know, Sunday lunch because Saturday night they had a bit of a party and they want burger, and you have to make, you know, homemade chips, homemade bun, homemade everything. And you're going to make good Italian food and maybe a bit of French food and, you know, tacos on Tuesday. So you still have to be, and I feel like this is hard to be a great yacht chef is whatever, and this is how I saw it, whatever recipe you haven't done or whatever technique or whatever cuisine you have no idea about, make it. You know, force yourself to do it. Practice on a crew. I know it sounds bad, but just, you know, as a chef, you should be able to recreate anything anyway. Like in terms, you just have to play with the flavor, the acidity, the salt, all of this, and the texture. But if there is, like, let's say you're not great at Mexican cuisine as a chef, then spend a week and make, like, you know, 5-10 recipes of Mexican cuisine. And you're going to realize after a week, like, you've gained so much. And not all of them is going to be excellent, but you're definitely going to get, like, one, two, or three that you're like, yeah, I can use this on my next Mexican buffet.
Well, I think that's what separates the chefs that succeed and fail in this industry is the ones that do have more of an all-rounded approach to the different cuisines. Because when I'm employing a chef, and I've been fortunate not to have to worry too much, my brother worked with me for 5 years, Carl has worked with me for a long time, and I've worked with some great chefs in the relief roles. But they really have that spread of different culinary experiences to be able to stand in front of the clients and offer them different things and adjust. But what I love about chefs is in the back of their mind, there's this whole fridge of storeroom areas of their ingredients. So they're presenting a dish, but at the same time, they're thinking, all right, I've only got 12 avocados left. I can't sell guacamole. I've only got 2 portions of fish left. I've only got, you know, 12 steaks left. And that's why I think people don't value chefs enough. is because what they go through is such a controlled environment in terms of space and availability. That's 7-day provisions.
Yeah.
You don't want to provision every day, but you should provision every day to get fresh produce. So it's a, you don't want frozen produce. So it's such a tough battle to find that balance, you know?
Yeah.
But that comes from training. So the question I've got is, we talk about training. My brother and my father, they did their 4-year apprenticeship in Australia, went to Europe for a couple of years to expand their horizons, and then ran restaurants. I see a lot of yacht chefs coming in here that I would probably consider cooks from my growing up and from my brother's and my father's yeah. perspective. Not saying they're not good. They're not culinary trained in that length of period that I see that I've respected when I was a child in my father's peers and my brother's peers. Is there other platforms available for these yacht chefs to go to get a solid culinary training in a shorter period of time other than a 4-year apprenticeship?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's different ways for a chef that would not be culinary trained. The most obvious one is to do a short course. You know, you can do a week in Paris or in London and train yourself in pastry, for example. You can, go on a holiday in Thailand and spend 3 days in a Thai cooking class, which would definitely change the way you cook Thai food, like forever. Like I've done it. I went to Bangkok. I did the Blue Elephant cooking class, something like that. Amazing, because to be frank, Liam, when I was making Thai curry first, I was putting cream in it. You know, because I was like, oh, it's creamy. It's got to be half cream. And like, this is my French brain, you know? And I went to Thailand. And I was like, it's coconut cream. Okay.
Coconut cream. There's the taste.
And yeah. So you can do that. You can go on holiday and, you know, have a good time and just learn the cuisine on site. You can also, another way, which is, it's becoming more and more difficult, but it's to go do an internship or a stage. You know, there is a few restaurants that always need free labor. They need people to help them in the kitchen. So often the Michelin star restaurant, because if you go into another restaurant and it's not anything, it's not a well-known restaurant, you might lose your time doing this. But if you go to a Michelin star restaurant and you go for a stage, so an internship, and you work 2-3 weeks, often for free or for almost nothing, you're going to expose yourself to all these chefs, the recipe, the menu they're running, and you're going to get, you know, many ideas, many recipes, many techniques that you would have never got from a school.
I mean, you're going to see a lot too. I mean, so what's your advice then? If you're someone who's either ashore as a chef or going into yachting or maybe as a crew chef and you want to step up, what kind of advice? You'd go short courses in the different culinary areas of the world? What other advice would you give them? How can you help them with provisions and understanding the management side of things?
So if you've never worked on a boat, and this is what I said to the young chef that I talked to, I would always advise, because I studied myself, because we didn't really dive into how I got into yachting, but after this free Michelin star restaurant, I applied anywhere in the world, and I was lucky to find a job as a sous chef on a 55 meters. Okay. Wow. And that was my entry into yachting. And I had no idea about yachting. I had never seen the Mediterranean Sea before. I didn't know anything about yachting and luxury yachts. I just went there because captain said, hey, we're looking for a sous chef. We are in Nice. Do you want to come? We pay for your flight and we have an interview. I was like, yeah, sure. I'm coming. And I went there, and then that opens up my eyes to the world of yachting. And so, but the luck that I had is that I was a sous chef. So I got to learn from a head chef that had spent at the time, I think he had spent 15 years on yachts. So his name is Steve, and he's not working on boats anymore, but hopefully he's watching this today. So Steve, thank you so much. What I mean is he told me a lot of the things to do and what not to do. And that's something that it's really, really hard to find out about this. So, I actually, in 2021, I actually wrote a book called The Yacht Chef Guide, which is, the idea was during COVID, you know, the boat was not running, I was home. I had a bit of time on my hands. So I was like, okay, let's put all what I know about yachting and how to be a yacht chef into a book so that people could actually read it and discover how, you know, it's not a book to teach you how to cook, because I'm not here to teach chefs how to cook. Yeah. The idea was, okay, you're a chef from a restaurant. Basically, your question, you're from a restaurant, you want to go on a boat, what do you need to know? And this book is like, you know, it's not very big. It's not a memoir, or it's about, you know, 100 pages. Yeah. But it tells you everything from...
That's what I was leading you to promote your book, you know?
Ah, there you go.
How can people find it?
It's called The Yacht Chef Guide. I'm actually thinking about launching this year an update on the book because it was published in 2021, I think. Yeah. It's not a long time ago, but things are moving fast now in yachting, and boats are getting bigger. And, you know, it was also my first book, so I feel like I can just add to it a little bit more and maybe just relaunch it. The idea of the book is not to make money. It's really to help people. And I'm, you know, anyone that wants the book, feel free to contact me. I send it over to on Facebook groups, and anyone that asks me, they get a free copy, audiobook or PDF, whatever they want. But the idea was really that is just read the book and you'll know, you know, 80% of what you need to know to work on a boat. You know, how do you deal with garbage? How do you work at sea? How do you prepare for a crossing? How do you go shopping? You know, shopping for with a provisioning company, shopping with a taxi and carful bags, you know, shopping in the city. Like, how do you cook for crew? What do you cook for crew? How do you deal with, like, you know, fire drill and all this stuff when you have to prepare food? And they're like, hey, chef, we have a drill in 10 minutes. And you're like, why didn't you tell me yesterday?
Do you want lunch or not lunch? Do you want lunch or do you not want lunch?
Look, this is something I was very frustrated about. And I'm sure if you know, the chefs watching, they will second me on that. Please tell your chef that there's a drill tomorrow, or tell your chef that there is 5 extra contractors for lunch tomorrow, because you know that already and the chef doesn't. And if you tell him at 10 o'clock in the morning tomorrow, he's probably going to get upset and he's going to have to, you know, make magic. So
the other tough one though, Chris, is when the captain or one of the heads of the department decide to have 2 or 3 days off. Everyone relax. It's been a big trip.
Yeah.
3 days off. And you can knock off at 12 o'clock today.
Sure.
The chef down there in the galley just furious. And you're like, what's wrong, chef? Well, you know, I've got to cook 12, 20 different crew dishes for 3 days to get through the weekend food. You know, it's thanks for the days off, Cap. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I have a question for you. How do you feel about chefs that sometimes get takeaway for crew on the board?
I don't mind. I mean, I honestly don't mind at all. Personally, I enjoy eating the food the chefs create.
Yeah.
But I think takeaway food has really evolved over the years, so it's not highly processed. There's a lot of different varieties. A lot of it's pre-made, like pre-made salads, make your life a little bit easier.
Yeah.
I think our expectations of food are way too high, and I like seeing what I'm seeing on Instagram and different platforms where chefs are just toning the crew food down a little bit to make it simple, the mac and cheese and a nice, you know, grilled cutlets, steak or different, you know, like, tone it down, because if we're not the guests, we are the workers, and we went to design as a team. So the chef's priority for me is always the client. And if you've got a sous chef or you've got crew to help, that's great. Doesn't mean food doesn't have to be out at 12 o'clock or 5 o'clock or whatever the chef wants to do. But I think you've got to find that balance with the chef, because they traditionally work the longest hours on charter.
Yeah.
So off charter, give them a break. Do all you can as a team. I'd have a
and you know, Liam, you mentioned what would I say to a chef that wants to get on a boat. The one thing that I repeat multiple times to chefs that start their career on a boat, and I was talking to one, you know, French girl that got a job on a boat in Antibes she started 2 weeks ago, and she's, you know, she's in heaven. And funny thing is the captain wanted someone with experience, but I was like, look, she's solid. She has worked in amazing restaurant. She's done this for years. She can deliver on your boat. Don't worry. But what I said to her a few times is like, you know, crew food is not staff meal, because in restaurant, staff meal is something you do very fast with the leftovers, with almost nothing, and people take 2 minutes to eat and then they run back into the kitchen.
Yeah.
Crew food is almost, and I hate to say it, it's almost more important than the guest food, because guest food, the chefs, they have that under control. They can do it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm often not worried about guest food. I'm more like, look, take care of your crew, because this would be the one thing that would really irritate the crew and the captain, and you would, like, you know, you would put yourself in jeopardy if you're not like taking care of the crew.
True, but the expectations of the crew sometimes have to be matched. I've seen junior crew come down and say, "Oh, the steaks aren't big enough," or, you know, certain scenarios, not on this program, but it's like, I think it's a balance. Everything has to be a balance, but it is about wellness, and you've got to provide the salads and the fruit. Like our chef does a great job giving us a fruit bowl every day.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's like that's part of our meal, and Costa Rica's great fruit. I usually cut this at 15 minutes, to be honest, Chris, but we've gone on because I really enjoyed talking to
you. Go for it. Go for it. I've got time.
I think it's important that people understand kind of the backside of the back end of yachting and the challenges that we face trying to put crew on different boats.
Yeah.
And this is a good chat because it's a captain's perspective and it's a chef's perspective, who now you've transitioned to probably the leading chef agency in yachting. So it's good information. On that, what's the challenges that you've found in your recent kind of career since post-COVID or in your career itself, placing chefs? I'm sure you've got good stories and bad stories, but what's something that you've found is really consistently hard that you'd want to advise captains almost in a way?
Yeah.
Or like you said, crew food, advice brokers, advice owners, advice...
No, there's something that comes to mind straight away is captain on you know, smaller boats. They often have very high expectation on what chef they want, but unfortunately they don't have the budget for the chef they want. And when I'm telling them, and you know, I work with a lot of clients, and sometimes the salaries are, you know, a little bit lower for a sous chef, or it's a crew chef, but they have rotation, so the salary is a bit lower, which is, you know, for me, it's fair. If you get, you know, half the year off, but you still pay 12 months. Technically, every month you work, you get 2 months salary. So that's decent. But I sometimes get a comment on from chefs saying, you know, this is not right. This is not industry standard. And, you know, because sometimes people only look at the salary. They don't really look at everything else, which is there rotation? Is it a busy boat or is it not busy? Is it a boat that only has one guest because the principal is alone? And unfortunately, he doesn't have friends or family. So it's just one. Is the boat only used on a weekend and you've got, you know, 5 days a week, you're always on a dock in the south of France or, you know, in the marina in Dubai or somewhere, I don't know. So there's a lot of things to...
And you're riding your bikes on the weekend.
Yeah. So it's not just about the number that you see on the bottom of the ad. It's about everything else and what they want. So of course, you know, there is a bit of, you know, range on the salaries. But the one thing that I've noticed is that captains on smaller boat, they tend to... they want, you know, an excellent chef, but they sometimes pay only 60% of that, what an excellent chef would cost. And I am trying to tell them, look, this, you are below average. You are below the standard. You need to increase it. You need to go higher. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I'm just putting myself in the chef's shoes. And I'm like, I would not do this for this salary. And I have work, you know, my first job, I was on, you know, a few grand a month. And it was still double to what I was making in the UK. In a free Michelin star restaurant.
Yeah.
But I didn't have to pay for accommodation. I didn't have to pay for food. I was traveling the world. I was, you know, living on this mega yacht. Like there's a sense of pride as well. When you work on the yacht. But yeah, the salary thing is something that I'm fighting for it. I'm fighting to increase the salary. I'm fighting to encourage, like I spoke to a captain actually 4 months ago. We've placed a chef for here, a head chef and hopefully a sous chef. You know, I said to him, he was suggesting that maybe we should have, you know, they should have a sous chef and give the sous chef, you know, 60 days off per year. And I said, yes. Or if you want, you know, maybe you can lower a little bit of salary, not a lot, but by a little bit, have two sous chef, two on, two off. And then you have 12 months a year, you have consistency in what you deliver to the crew, no matter if you're on a crossing in a shipyard. And also because he has, he wanted to have a head chef that would be a guest chef. So he would only come during trips. So, you know, we're talking about a crew chef that would be on a boat 10 months a year, cooking for a lot of crew with a lot of expectations. And like you said, like sometimes being put under pressure. So, you know, I'm trying to raise the salary up, and some boats are great. Some are still too low. And I don't take them as a client at the end. I can't work with them because I said, look, I cannot advertise a salary like this. So unfortunately, good luck, but I can't help you.
Oh, good. It's transparency. It's like for me with longevity, it's like, and permanent crew, I'm like, it's hard because I see so much crew leaving after 3 months or 6 months on a program and they're having issues on board. And I'm like, just try and get through those. But I also, on the other end, I encourage crew to leave after like a year sometimes. Depends on their growth and their expansion. don't get stagnant in it. If you can go up in a role, you can go up in your wage, and you can go year after year up, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that's what the issues usually have. We've got to wrap it up, though. We keep going too long. In closing, though, what's something exciting that you're seeing in the industry or something you're seeing in your company that you want to share with everyone?
Look, the company is growing. There's a bunch of us now. There's about four, five. So, you know, we're growing. We're not growing fast, but we're growing because we get more clients in the US. We get more clients in, you know, private residences. You know, there's big yachts that also talk to us more and more. We get a lot more clients that come to us, which is, you know, it's amazing. It's taken its time because, to be honest, Liam, when I started, like we spoke about before we started the live call, I started this and I didn't offer myself a plan B. I really quit working on the boat and I just wanted to be, you know, to be running Montclair Chef full time. And I feel like we've lost Liam again. So yeah, I was, so when I started running Montclair, when I launched the company, that was about 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years now. I didn't really allow myself to have a plan B. I didn't want to have this in my head and say, if this doesn't work, I can always go back as a private chef, or I can go back and do a season on the boat. This is really something I didn't want to happen. And I was really focused on running the business. And and most of my friends, most of my family were, you know, suggesting, why don't you go back on the boat, you know, if it doesn't work out. And I was really focused on doing this. So yeah, the first 8 months were quite tough because it was, you know, a lot of grinding, a lot of daily grinding and trying to make the business work. But now after 2.5 years, I think we're starting to get some speed. We're getting some traction. And like I said, like we've got quite a few clients that now reach out to us directly. We've got repeat clients, you know, that can be both. They can be residences. You know, we have clients in London, in Monaco, in Geneva. I mean, we have some in the US, Los Angeles, New York. So the company is growing. So this is something that I'm very proud of. And you know, this is it's a very exciting time for us. So yeah, I hope that that answers your question. Chefs, if you are looking for, I just wanted to suggest something. If you are trying to get into the yachting industry, if you're trying to break into the yachting industry, I would be more than happy myself or my colleague to have a look at your CV. If you want some really honest feedback, unbiased feedback, just feel free to get in touch with us. Send us your CV, and we can even have a quick 20-minute call, and we can have a look at your CV, and I can tell you what I think we could improve in your CV, what we could remove, what we could add. Also, we could check your portfolio. If you want to have some, you know, like I said, I speak to chefs every day and I see, you know, hundreds of CVs every week. So anything that I could do to help you, I would be happy to do it. You know, we can get, like I said, we can get on a quick call. I can just exchange an email quickly with you. You know, send me your CV, send me your portfolio, and we can have a chat because I feel like sometimes it's quite difficult to put yourself in the shoes of the captain or the hiring manager. All right, seems like Liam is unavailable now. So anyway, chefs, if you need some help with your CV, just let me know. I would be really happy to help you and to have a look at the CV. And you know, if we can get you a job this way, that would be amazing. Oh, we've lost Liam. All right, thank you so much for everyone watching the live. We're gonna share that tomorrow on our platforms. I think Liam will do the same. And yeah, Liam is saying thank you so much for attending and we'll see you next time. So I guess I just finished the live chat with all of you guys. Thank you so much for watching. MontclairChef.com, if you're looking for a chef or if you're looking for a job, let me know. And yeah, it was really a pleasure to be online tonight with you guys. And Liam, thank you so much. Hopefully next time we can do a live chat from Montclair Chef and you'll get a better internet. So, all right, guys. Thank you so much. Ciao, ciao.